And while you're looking hesitantly at lunch and breakfast, think once more of those poor prawns. We know that bees are adversely affected by those new pesticides. Could prawns also be at risk? This warning comes from a Dorothy Hill Prize winner at Southern Cross University in Lismore, Dr. Kirsten Benkendorf.
Pesticides are obviously developed to target specifically insects, but prawns are in the same phylum, Arthropoda, so they have very similar central nervous systems, which is where these pesticides actually target. So it's kind of crazy to think that they won't impact commercially important crustaceans like prawns and crabs, as well as the insects that they're designed to target.
And were people nonetheless surprised to find that this was the case?
Well, the research actually has hardly been done at all. People have assumed that insecticides, pesticides are used in terrestrial agriculture and don't get into aquatic systems. But the new breed of pesticides, the neonicotinoids, are actually water soluble. And studies from right around the world have actually been detecting quite significantly high levels in waters, up to 200 micrograms per litre. Even CSIRO, a study in Australia, has found in some Queensland rivers over 1 microgram per litre of these pesticides.
That sounds enormous.
It is when you consider the toxicity of them, so the concentrations that are actually required to cause an effect. So you can detect them, you know, around 1 microgram per litre, but they may be effective at 0.2 micrograms per litre. And that's when you do actually get concerned about the impacts that they may have on the organisms.
What are the levels like in this region?
In this particular region of the northern rivers, I don't think they're as great as they are in some of the rivers higher up in Queensland, where they are doing more intensive sugar cane farming. A lot of the rivers haven't been sampled, however. So to my knowledge, the Clarence River is the only one that's been sampled, and it had high levels of some other types of pesticides, but not the neonicotinoids specifically. So it probably depends on the type of agriculture. I would be concerned in areas around where there might be turf farms, and where there might be blueberries, for example, because it's approved for use in those types of scenarios.
What did you find when you went to Vietnam?
I was very interested in the situation in Vietnam, because there they do actually co-culture prawns or shrimp and rice. They sometimes integrate them, and sometimes it's a rotational type system. And they are getting really high rates of mortality, where sometimes it's actually up to 100% of the prawns are dying. And that's probably an interaction of a whole bunch of stresses and disease that are causing these problems. But there's no doubt that pesticides would actually contribute. So we are finding the models of farming there potentially is increasing the susceptibility of the prawns to the pesticides.
When the entire crop is wiped out, what do they do? What can they do?
Often it results in the small-scale farms becoming unviable, and they're usually taken over by larger-scale industry, and this often results in digging up mangroves and moving to a new area. Huge amount of mangroves are being removed over there. It's quite startling.
Haven't they learned that one yet?
I think there's people who know, but there's also that sort of level of influence coming in from big business in China, which are basically just buying out big tracts of land, and they are building these intensive prawn farms. It's just a completely different model. They do use a lot more sterilisation of the system, and they can have more control over the water quality. So a lot of those prawns are perhaps not as contaminated, but also perhaps not tested to the levels that we would. But the bigger problem is around the Mekong Delta and other areas where they still have these models of rice prawn, small-scale farming, and it's the livelihoods of people, but also the types of prawns that are getting onto the domestic market, which are probably containing the contaminants that wouldn't be allowed on the export market. So whatever's rejected from the export market ends up on the local domestic market in Vietnam.
Who are your scientific colleagues there?
I have a number of collaborators in Vietnam. A colleague, Dr. Vinh Dang, was actually my PhD student at Flinders University and now is the head of aquaculture at Ha Long University. I have collaborators at Nha Trang University, a very good relationship with those guys, and also at Kanto University, where they have a lot of connections into the Mekong Delta. So were able to take me in to visit a few farmers, some who are actually quite innovative and realising that co-culture with prawns is actually a model for potential organic growth of rice. They can't do it without the prawns, because the prawns contribute the fertiliser, essentially, that enables the rice to grow without the use of inorganic fertilisers. And they found better growth of their rice, better survivorship, less disease problems, and the prawns did better as well. But they are concerned, of course, about the runoff from all of the farms surrounding. Unless a whole district changes, they're still going to get those water quality issues. So yeah, there's a real cultural shift that needs, I think, to move towards an organic model that sustainably integrates prawns with agriculture.
You've mentioned prawns a lot. What about oysters?
Yes, we've been working on prawns and oysters back here in Australia. The good thing is that the baseline levels of oysters and prawns that we collect, I'm not finding these pesticides. But when we actually expose them in the tanks, we do find that they accumulate the pesticides. They can accumulate up to the concentrations of around 2 milligrams per kilogram, which would exceed the tolerable level that would be considered for meat. At the moment, there's no tolerance level set for seafood, I guess on the assumption that seafood aren't exposed to them, but clearly they can absorb them, and certainly after flood type events it could be quite an issue. But some of the encouraging things that we found with the oysters is that whilst they accumulate the pesticides very quickly, if you put them into clean water, they depurate very quickly as well.
So, that's a new word for me. Depurate?
Yeah, depuration is just the removal of the contaminants from the flesh, and that can happen within 3 days. We can be back to zero detection of these pesticides in the flesh. So it does actually offer a solution for cleaning up for human consumption. But of course, that's the impacts on human consumption. What about the impacts on the oysters and the impacts on the prawns themselves? So we have found that it does actually significantly inhibit the feeding rate of the oysters. And we certainly are in the process with the PhD students of looking at a whole bunch more bioindicators. So we know that it affects some enzymes specifically. We're also interested to see how it impacts their immune system and how it impacts the reproduction. And, you know, the early life stages are often more vulnerable.
The source of the pesticide, obviously you've mentioned various farming areas, but does the pesticide come down in predictable ways? In other words, if there's runoff, there it is, you can identify it. Or does it come from various parts of the soil whenever there's a rain? And so what you've got to do is think ahead as to what might happen if you use too much pesticide, rather than just assume if you block off the running water, you'll be okay?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and modelling is probably complicated by the fact that different pesticides are different chemical structures and they will actually react differently. So some have quite short half-lives and will actually break down quite rapidly in sunlight, for example. Others will actually be absorbed into the sediment and can hang around for years, and certainly some are going to be more water-soluble than others. The neonicotinoid pesticides are not only water-soluble, but they do actually seem to have long half-lives. So certainly overuse is definitely a problem. Using doses at the right weather conditions, not just before rain, is going to be better, not only for the farmers who want to retain it where they actually need it, as well as the environment in terms of preventing that runoff. So thinking, I think, carefully about the right times of the year. And in those areas where there may be integrated agriculture with aquaculture, I think that there very much needs to be considered what pesticides are going to be retained in the sediment where you're actually looking at growing the aquatic organisms as well.
Well, congratulations on your work. I can see why you won the Dorothy Hill Award a while ago. Finally, is the industry listening to you?
I think it's going to be a little bit more time and a lot more evidence accumulated before the industry. I mean, even in Australia, with respect to the known effects on bees overseas, there's reluctance to actually limit and restrict the use of neonicotinoid pesticides. So I guess we just hope we can keep accumulating more evidence to build up that case that these products really need some rethinking, because the long-term effects on our food industries can be quite significant.
Associate Professor Kirsten Benkendorf at Southern Cross University in Lismore, New South Wales.